Stevenson. Welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, back with John Rurink. He's back from Hawaii. Yeah, you bring back anything for us this time around?
Mixed six-pack of options in terms of macadamia nuts and Kona coffee for the office.
Oh, that's nice. Is that what's in the coffee pot right now?
Absolutely.
All right, well. Yeah, our special guests here then might have wished they'd taken you up on the coffee. Joining us this week, Dennis Denno from Denno Research, Jeff Timmer, and Dan McMaster from Grassroots Midwest. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
I thought we could go over the political races right now, how things are standing 5 weeks out from the election. As things are looking right now, guys, 2014... as far as turnout, enthusiasm, all the different intangibles, most resembles which year, Dennis?
I don't know about turnout, but this kind of reminds me of 2004, where you had Kerry and Bush. So you have an incumbent Republican, and then you have a Democrat, but neither one of them really seem to be firing up their base.
Okay. Well, that's not right. What would you say, Jeff?
Boy, I mean, I'm just going through this in my head, and you have to go way back, probably to, maybe 1978 with Milliken versus Fitzgerald.
Wow, that is way back. Jeez.
Where a race that was, looked like it could be tighter than it ended up being. You had Milliken running for his third term and ended up with a very spirited race and ended up, winning by a comfortable margin. And I think that's what we're likely to see again.
This isn't a swing race, or this isn't going to be a wave election here, is it,
no,
Dan?
No, it's not. And that's why, Jeff mentions in the 70s, and I was born in 72, so I don't remember that much about the 78 cycle, but you have, it could be like 04, it could be like 02, where it's not a wave election either way. You're going to get, you're actually going to get, probably medium turnout. You don't have a lot of people super excited. You may have some House races and Senate races that are driving the turnout. It might not necessarily be the gubernatorial race or the Attorney General race or Secretary of State or the U.S. Senate race.
And why is that? Why aren't folks excited?
Well, I know on the Republican side, obviously, there's a whether it's the Tea Party group or some other groups within the Republican Party. They'll probably vote for Snyder. They'll turn out for Snyder, but they're not huge Snyder fans. There's a chunk of the party that 4 years ago, majority of the party didn't elect him. 4 years later, there's still a chunk of the party that's, not all that excited with him. And then on the Democrat side, you have a lot of people who don't even know who Mark Schauer is.
What about on the Democratic side?
I think part of the reason why no one's excited is you have two candidates who are relatively moderate within their own party. They're both pretty boring, and I think the candidate who can keep the most people awake at the end of the race might win this thing.
Well, I think that there's a tendency here in Lansing to look at this race and we would say, it's not a wave election. I don't know that it's not going to be because
really?
The context of this election is still going to be dictated, I think, a lot out of Washington, D.C. And there could be a wave building. You have a president who's abysmally unpopular. I mean, his favorability, job performance is hovering around 40%. There's a whole lot of factors. You've got economic uncertainty. The Dow is crashing again today. You've got foreign policy uncertainty.
Real uncertainty. I mean, there's a lot that can happen in 4 weeks.
Right. And right now, it really looks bad. And you got the six-year itch election. And I think that because there's been so much focus here among folks on the gubernatorial race, we're kind of not looking at that national climate, and I think that's going to have a lot of impact.
So let me ask you two Republicans, can the Snyder campaign take advantage of this? Because looking in at the Snyder campaign, I'm not impressed. I think he's missed huge opportunities.
Well, I don't know that I don't know that I agree with that, but I also don't know that they need to take advantage. I think this is one of these kind of organic things that they're going to benefit from, regardless of what the campaign does.
You clearly could have, depending on what happens in the Middle East, and obviously I'm not wishing a terrorism attack or anything in the next 4 or 5 weeks, but you could have some drastic terrorist attacks here or abroad that changes that changes the dynamic, what people think of Obama, for better or worse, depending on what his response is, what our country's response is. And then the U.S. Senate race, you know, if it's not about the money, it's about the money. And depending on what happens with that, a lot of money can come in on either side or both sides that can drive the turnout beyond what a gubernatorial race can.
Well, let me ask that, because the defining issue of the U.S. Senate race right now isn't about the Middle East or ISIS or anything like that right now. It's about stinky pet coke. Or something, right, Dennis?
Peter's just trying to say that the, Terry Lynn lands in the back pocket of the Koch right. family. And it seems to be working, because I'm not sure what Terry Lynn Land message is.
Well, what is it, Jeff? Have you been able to figure it out?
What? Is she still campaigning?
Well, she is. She shows up at events and then tells us after she's done, and after she's already left.
There's been a narrative that's developed over the summer, and again, I don't know that this is one that I would totally agree with, that the Land campaign has failed or failed to capitalize on opportunities. Really, to me, the narrative here, if that's – let's just – say for the sake of argument that they have lost the summer. Why isn't Gary Peters further ahead in a state like Michigan? I think there's a lot of flaws with Gary Peters as a candidate as well. The polls are showing, yes, that Peters has been consistently ahead through the summer, but not by a big margin, and certainly not by any margin that would give comfort if there is a national wave that starts to build. Because just as, you know, Terry Land could be the beneficiary, regardless of what her campaign has done or will do, of an anti-Obama, anti-Democrat turnout, where you've got Republicans or independents turning out just to say, I'm voting against those guys in Washington.
Hmm. Right. So Dan, it sounds like Snyder could be the beneficiary of not what he does or has done for Michigan, but just as kind of a freak circumstance of what happens in Washington.
What happens in Washington, what happens in some of these House and Senate races. You know, you've got several Senate races that are battleground seats. You have a lot of House races that are either Republicans are going after some incumbents, or the Dems are going after Republican incumbents, or there's open seats. There are a lot of battleground seats. So there's pockets.
Well, let's talk about those seats.
And there's a lot of pockets that overlap each other. So,
well, not to get specific about specific House seats or Senate seats or congressional seats, but do you see in areas of the state where people are excited and they want to go out and vote? Because here in the 8th Congressional District, I forgot that we even had a congressional race.
Right. I mean, you have, even in the 8th, there aren't a lot of House races, Senate races that are contested. But in some parts of the state, I mean, you're starting to see the mail starting to flow. Both sides in some races have sent upwards of 10 pieces of mail already. Signs are going up. If you're looking at polling numbers, a lot of the candidates, the incumbents, you know, they're approaching that 45, 46, 47% mark. They're not quite at 50 yet. You know, you're 7 to 10 days away from probably usually a second round of polling to try to figure out where all the candidates are, and you know, you're seeing activity now, but it's sporadic. I mean, you drive around the state, it's very sporadic. And I have to tell you, I spent the weekend in Ohio and West Virginia, and it's the same way there. Mm-hmm. When you drive through both states, it isn't like there's sign coverage through the whole state for top of the ticket stuff. It's spotty. It's where there's House races.
So be specific. Where in the state are we seeing actual activity?
You're seeing a lot of activity over in the Kalamazoo Battle Creek area, where we have Margaret O'Brien running for Senate. You have a couple House races over there. You're seeing some activity in Southeast Michigan, the Colbeck seat, which spills over into the Canton House seat. A lot of these areas are overlapping. You've got the Ken Horn, Stacey Irwin Oaks race, and then you have Glardon's House seat underneath that. There's some activity that's starting there. So it's pockets.
But, so it sounds pretty spotty, Dennis. And so when you're talking about a statewide campaign, that's nothing really you can count on, is it?
I just don't see the enthusiasm or excitement in any corner of the state, to be honest with you. It's really kind of surprising and disappointing.
Is this guy's just like a hangover election? We were such a swing in 8, such a swing in 10, 12 was kind of... It just sort of feels like...
I would argue, if you go all the way back to 6... because you had six where you had the rejection of Bush. Even some Republicans were rejecting Bush. I know where I live in Shiawassee County, you had Mike Rogers and Dave Camp, who did worse in 06 than in 08. You had a bigger turnout in 06 in some precincts than you had in 08. And then you had 08, you had 10, you have 12. I think there was a little bit of fatigue. There's a little bit of burnout. We had some serious heavy primaries, whether they were congressional primaries or Senate primaries or House primaries, that probably fatigued some people over the summer.
I just think there's no statewide candidate that excites their base. There's no real sexy issue out there that's going to motivate people to vote. There's just
Would you say we're boring all the way across the ticket?
We're kind of a boring state right now.
Well, Jeff, you just got done with a very competitive race in the 4th Congressional District. Did you get a sense from the people up there that they were really engaged, excited, and wanted to participate in an election and really felt like it was super important?
Oh, there was a relatively low turnout in the primary election,
right,
despite the amount of money that was spent. I mean, I think we're going to be looking at a fairly normal turnout election, 3.1 million people, maybe 3.2 tops.
Which is interesting because we've got open congressional seats and the dynamics of the state haven't really changed much as far as, you know, what this could mean depending on who wins.
Well, I think you're going to see, when this is all over, continued Republican dominance of Lansing. You're likely to see Snyder reelected. The state Senate's going to remain in Republican hands. I think the state House, the Republicans are likely to add seats. The Supreme Court's going to stay Republican, Attorney General, Secretary of State. And so, I think that one of the storylines that's going to be written out of this election is going to be the Democrats' failure to capitalize on the Republican or their success in presidential years to translate that into any sustained ability to influence public policy in Lansing.
You know, Dennis, we just finished a poll or an insider survey this past week, and what really struck me from the results was nobody's really predicting anything substantial or earth-shattering. It kind of seemed like a status quo type of results.
Yeah, true. I mean, most people predicted the governor, attorney general, secretary of state was going to stay Republican. Dems would pick up seats in the Michigan House. U.S. Senate stays Democratic. And that's kind of the problem with Dems is that we do great in presidential years and always struggle to get our base to come out to vote in gubernatorial years. And so I think it'll be interesting to see if what Lon Johnson and the Michigan Democratic Party is trying to do to gin up our base and get our people out to vote is actually going to work.
And you should be able to, in theory, within the next 10 days, 14 days, you should be able to see if his plan, as kind of a prelude to the actual election day, if you look at absentee ballots, somebody should be able to do an analysis and see if there's an uptick in AV voters that normally only vote in 8 and 12, and see if they're actually starting to, because that would be part of their plan, is not just get everyone out on election day, the lost voters, but also try to get some of them nailed down with absentees, and you should be able to tell that pretty soon.
You know what I've been struck is the Republican Party and the Democratic Party both seem like they're micro-targeting more than they have in past, as far as like trying to get use technology to say, hey, look, if you want to help us out, here's an app where you can pick out your neighbors who could possibly vote. Why don't you go and talk to this neighbor, that neighbor, that neighbor, and that neighbor, and either get them excited or see if you can't get an AV application in their hand or something. I guess I haven't seen that level of sophistication before, Jeff.
Well, the tools now exist to apply that level of sophistication. It's taking the personal art of campaigning, looking at people in the eye and knocking on their door and influencing your neighbors, your friends, your colleagues, and just giving you different tools to do that, and more importantly, giving the campaigns the ability to track what is being done and to be able to recontact and energize and deploy those people to persuade those people in different ways.
Yeah, but we never needed technology in the past to do that.
Well, in smaller races, local races, primary races, our side's always used that as a tactic, and we've always done the heavy door-to-door and the neighborhood meet and greets and all that stuff. But it allows a statewide candidate now to capture that data and to use it. The larger campaigns are able to use that a little more now.
As easier as it has become to reach people, the harder it's become to reach people.
Because there's so
many, well, there's so many different ways to contact people. There's so many. It used to be you could buy advertising on the three networks and you could reach 100% of your audience. It's no longer that
way. Or call them at home because they all had home phones.
Right. So now I don't even know the diminishing number of percentage that have landlines that you can even reach. People who receive their information online and in different ways is growing, and the ability to reach them online has been growing and becoming more sophisticated.
It's not just advertising on MLive or your local newspaper website. Now it's you have to do Facebook ads. You know, you have to send out email newsletters, and everyone gets bombarded by emails. So, there's a lot of different ways to reach these people, but it's the law of diminishing returns almost.
And so how does that influence polling then, Dennis?
Well, less landlines means you need to do more cell phones, which raises the cost of doing polls.
And so how difficult is it to get cell phones? Because most people don't like to be bothered on their cell phone. They kind of feel like it's a personal affront.
It's not difficult. I have not found it difficult to get lists of voters with cell phones. I think the difficulty is these firms that do these really long, ridiculous polls, no one's going to sit on a cell phone and do that.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
There's no 30, you can't have somebody on for 30 minutes, 35 minutes. It either has to be a quick live voice for 5 minutes or a quick push button.
I'm not a fan of those push buttons. You can't do push buttons on cells.
Yeah.
And I'm just, in general, I think those are going to become more less and less accurate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, very good. Any other closing thoughts here? Any predictions here as we wrap up this podcast?
I think if the Democrats can get their base out to vote, it could be a very close gubernatorial election.
And Gary Peters wins by?
I think he wins by at least 5.
You think so? Is that being overly optimistic, Jeff?
I think time will tell on that. I think where I'm comfortable, I think we're going to see Snyder win a fairly comfortable re-election, out probably north of 5 points, somewhere between 5 and 10. I think the over-under on the state Senate is probably set right at 26. They could be at 25. They could be at 27 just as easy. And I think we're going to see 59, 60 Republicans in the state House.
Would you concur with that?
Yeah, and I think the real winners of this election Bill Schuette, Ruth Johnson. They're working hard. They have their campaigns. They're more than likely they're going to win. They're not going to have to spend a ton of money, and they're going to be poised then for 2018.
Already looking ahead at 2018. Oh, my gosh. I think we're all going to need a break after this one. But very good. Dennis Thenow, Jeff Timmer, Dan McMaster, thanks for joining us on this segment of the podcast.
Thank you.
Now joining us on the podcast, Judge Deborah Thomas. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invite.
So, candidate for the Supreme Court, this is your second go-around on the ballot. How has this time been different than the last time you were on?
More people know me.
Yeah, well, that's helpful, isn't it?
That is helpful. And it's an opportunity to go back and meet some folks and re-socialize with some folks that I worked with in the past. So it's enjoyable.
So running for Supreme Court is obviously a little different than running for governor or running for state representative. And this is a statewide election, but you still got to get your name out. What's been your tack this time?
Well, we have to educate voters that all judges are elected on that part of the ballot labeled nonpartisan. And so if they vote their straight party ticket, they haven't voted for a single solitary judge. They haven't voted for their city judge, their county, their court of appeals, or a Supreme Court justice. So it's a really double effort because in addition to getting your name out, you have to tell folks where to find it.
Right. And running for Supreme Court is difficult as well because it's not as if you can state a position or say how you would rule on a case. But you're probably used to that, aren't you?
I am. I have been on the Wayne County Circuit Court now going into 20 years. So I've had a couple of elections under my belt. And you cannot predict in advance how you're going to rule on certain issues. You don't have all the facts. You have to have the facts in front of you.
Yeah.
So people understand, and they want judges who are nonpartisan, which is why we're on the nonpartisan ballot. And so you work around that.
So why did you want to do this again? You didn't have to, obviously.
I had some concerns that addressed, there's a rumor afoot that there may be an effort to reallocate how the electoral votes are going to be assigned in the upcoming election. And that's going to depend greatly on the congressional district lines. Mm-hmm. And whether or not those lines are drawn constitutionally sound will ultimately rest with the Supreme Court. And it really brings to mind the question of one man, one vote. One woman, one vote, which is the core of our democracy. I'm a strong advocate of our Bill of Rights, our Constitution, and I this is my fight. This is my battle to protect the Constitution and the vote of one person, one vote.
Well, we've seen this in other states, and maybe there's only a couple where they divide it up differently than winner take all, but what's the concern here in Michigan if we go down that road?
Well, there are some areas where, because of the way the congressional lines are drawn for the district, an end of the candidate for the presidential election could get the popular vote and not win the electoral college vote in proportion to the number of people who actually choose that person. So we could have a minority of individuals electing who's going to be the president of the United States. And they've always, when you're a kid and you're in school and you have civics class, they always tell you that that's a possibility. But you really want, I think, the people of the state of Michigan do not want to be part of that leading team that creates a situation where the vote of an individual is not as equal to the next person's vote.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, there is no other office in that I can think of where we elect somebody based on an electoral college as opposed to who received the most votes.
It is interesting. It may be a time that as a country need to reexamine that whole concept. When we started with the electoral college, we were a baby country.
Mm-hmm, right.
Spreading the word. The telegram wasn't there. We had folks running around on horses, dropping off letters for those who were able to write. So it was a system that kind of fit an era when it may have taken 5 months to get the word. We can do that now in 5 seconds. We have the computer. We have fax. We're tweeting. We're texting. So we may need to reexamine. I don't know that that will be a change that the people will make. Mm-hmm. And it should be, once again, up to the people.
Yeah. Now, another thing I wanted to mention to you or ask you about, I saw that the Democratic Party had sent out a recent mailer advocating for two nominees for Supreme Court. Your name isn't on here. I see Richard Bernstein and Bill Murphy. I don't see any Deborah Thomas. What happened here?
Well, I think part of it, I was nominated by the Democratic Party at the Democratic Party convention. Murphy and Bernstein are in one race. I am in a separate race for the nonpartisan partial term. So my hope is that people will go to the part of the ballot where they find those two individuals, and while they're there, they'll notice that there's another race, and I'm in it. I'm the only woman out of 8 candidates for Supreme Court this year.
Oh.
Yeah, I was surprised too.
I guess I didn't put that together, but I guess you are.
So I'm hoping that when folks see the name Deborah Thomas, they'll say, oh, she's running too.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't know what happened with that flyer, but, there is another race. There's two races for Supreme Court this year.
Were you a little annoyed when you were made aware of this?
Well, I started getting phone calls. And so I had to start doing, I had not seen the piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to find a piece of the literature, and then I had to calm people down, and I had to explain, okay, this will not be the only effort that's going to be made. I don't think someone maliciously sat down and said, okay, how can we get Deborah Thomas?
All right.
I don't think it was a malicious act. Sometimes when people are working on a project and things are all being done by different folks and everybody doesn't know what the other person is necessarily doing, that there are times when there are slips and falls and trips. And all you can do is pick up the pieces and keep going forward.
So you're keeping a positive attitude, and I'm sure you've been assured by the party that this won't happen again?
Oh, they promised me this will not happen again.
Okay.
This is there may be some other mistakes, but this won't be one of them. So I'm just doubling down, and to some extent, it has generated some buzz.
Mm-hmm.
People are talking about it, so and when you're campaigning, getting the word out, letting folks know that you're there. There are people who are having a conversation about that mailer, and if it had all three names, we wouldn't be talking about it now.
Well, that's a good point. Absolutely. Also, outside of mailers, in the past, the Democratic Party has run TV ads featuring the three candidates that they've nominated for Supreme Court. Do you see that happening again this time, or is it going to be kind of each candidate to their own?
No one has mentioned to me that there will be any joint television.
Okay.
It might work out like the mailer did. I'll wake up one morning and who knows, I turn on the TV and there I am with the two other candidates. Which would be nice, or they may not be doing any joint effort at all. With the changes in the campaign finance laws, there's oftentimes people are doing things of their own separate from the candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And the first the candidate knows about it is when everybody else finds out. That is quite different than when I ran 10 years ago.
And what happened 10 years ago? What was it like?
For one thing, I was 10 years younger. And I had more youthful optimism and expectations.
Mm-hmm.
We did do joint mailings. I ran with Justice Marilyn Kelly at the time. And so we did a lot of more joint mailings. Some things were separate. I didn't do television in that election either.
Mm-hmm.
The resources were not there. The resources are not there this time for my campaign to do television. But we are meeting with as large a crowd as possible. I'm hoping that people will remember me from when I did run before. I've been extremely active in the community on a number of projects, trying to make sure that people are aware of new opportunities and what services are available. So it's not like I stuck my head in a hole and just disappeared from the face of the earth over 10 years. I've stayed busy.
Absolutely, I'm sure. Well, I'll let you get back out to meeting voters and talking with them about your vision for the Supreme Court. Appreciate the time, Judge Deborah Thomas.
Thank you. And it's on the nonpartisan ballot, partial term. I'm the only woman, so Deborah will be easy to recognize.
I'm sure it will be. All right, and that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to our panelists, Dennis Denno, Jeff Timmer, and Dan McMaster. And also thanks to Judge Deborah Thomas for stopping by MERS World Headquarters. Till next week, I'm Kyle Mullen. Take care.